Most of the world appears to have moved on from the COVID-19 pandemic, while the WHO says dangerous variants could still emerge. But is anyone listening? And what are the consequences if we let our guard down? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Derin Abugaida. It's been nearly 3 years since COVID-19 emerged and triggered a global pandemic. More than 6.6 million people have died from the disease. It disrupted economies around the world, but also led to an unprecedented effort to develop safe and effective vaccines in record time. Well, the number of new infections has now dropped significantly from its peak earlier in the year. The World Health Organization believes 90% of the global population now has some form of immunity, either from infections or vaccines. But its director general warns we should not be complacent.
We are much closer to being able to say that the emergency phase of the pandemic is over. But we're not there yet. Gaps in surveillance, testing, sequencing, and vaccination are continuing to create the perfect conditions for a new variant of concern to emerge that could cause significant mortality.
So the WHO says it's pleased to see China relaxing its so-called zero COVID policy. It's the last major economy to maintain strict lockdowns and mandatory quarantines. And this has triggered unprecedented protests, even calls for President Xi Jinping to step down. Cities including Beijing, Shanghai and Guangzhou have now eased some of their restrictions. And the WHO wants to increase vaccinations in developing nations. It's believed two-thirds of the world's people have received at least one dose, but that's concentrated in wealthier countries. Less than 10% of populations in nations like Mali, Malawi, Yemen and Haiti have received a single shot. Now let's bring in our guest. Joining us from Geneva is Dr. Margaret Harris, who's a spokeswoman for the World Health Organization. In Bristol in the UK, Dr. Gabriel Scally, a visiting professor of public health at the University of Bristol. And in New Delhi, we have with us Dr. Ravi Malik, who's the chairman and founder of the Radix Hospital in New Delhi. Thanks for your time with us on Inside Story. Dr. Margaret Harris in Geneva, so let's look at what the WHO is saying. And the chief has said that we are much closer to being able to say that the emergency phase of the pandemic is over, but we're not there yet. I just wonder if you can elaborate a little bit on that statement and tell us what this practically means.
I'm very glad you added that we're not there yet, because people really sort of focus on it's nearly over, and it's not, sadly. I mean, we are now going into the fourth year of this pandemic, and we're in a much, much better shape. We've got good vaccines. We understand how to treat the illness. We understand how to increasingly live with the virus. But the biggest mistake we could make is to just dismantle what we've achieved and pretend it's all over. We've got to keep doing the work, doing the testing, and really supporting our hospitals right now that are under threat from other things, like the many other respiratory viruses that are also circulating.
Right. I wonder if you can just clarify something for us as well, Dr. Margaret, because the WHO is saying that it estimates that 90% of the world population now has some resistance to COVID. But I know that you have said that that's not the case, that all countries have 90% immunity. So which countries or continents remain still very much vulnerable?
Well, every country, every continent, actually. I was just looking at the numbers of vaccination, and we still have countries in every region of the world that have not yet vaccinated 40% of their population. And we have very few countries that ever reached the level of vaccination that we'd want to see. So we've still all got a lot of work to do to vaccinate our populations. The other thing that's very important to understand is, yes, many, many people have now been infected by this virus, have got some immunity created by infection, and indeed many people have been vaccinated. But this particular virus doesn't stimulate a long-lasting immunity. So you still have to work to ensure that you've got the strong immunity in the most vulnerable groups. And that's an area that you just cannot let you take your pedal off the gas on. You've got to keep on being very vigilant to protect your most vulnerable groups.
All right. Dr. Gabriel, in the UK, what do you make of the message that's been sent out by the WHO?
I think it's a confusing message talking about 90% immunity, and the way it's been interpreted adds to that confusion, as indeed is the phrase that we are learning to live with the virus. I think we should be learning to live without the virus. What we do have are some good vaccines, which give some immunity for some time, but that immunity fades over time, even with the latest vaccine, which is the best we've got so far, really a good messenger RNA virus vaccine. It fades significantly, which is why countries are having to give regular boosters. So it's a dangerous message to say that we're nearly through some imaginary acute phase. There aren't as many ambulance sirens at the moment, but there are still large numbers of deaths. I sit in the UK where there are hundreds of deaths every week attributed to COVID-19, appears on the death certificates. In the US, 300 deaths a week. Even in countries with good immunization records, we still have a problem. And my big point is that what we're not concentrating on is doing what we need to do to live without the virus. We need to be improving ventilation in all our places, in schools, in offices, in social settings, etc., so that we treat this like the respiratory disease it is, and we avoid it.
All right, Dr. Margaret, I'll come back to you in a moment and allow you a chance to respond to Dr. Gabriel, who says the message is confusing. But let me just bring in Dr. Ravi from New Delhi to get his take on what the WHO has been saying. And what do you think of the message?
Look, according to WHO, almost 90% of the world population has got some kind of immunity. Now, the catch is some kind of immunity. It is not that 90% of them are now immune to this disease, so there is some kind of immunity. Now, my take on this is that maybe today 90% of people have some kind of immunity, but if we see long term, because the immunity after vaccination also wanes off after some period of time. So how many will be immune after, say, 6 months from now or 9 months from now? That is also a question. Now, having said that, we have come out of this kind of an extraordinary, unprecedented, catastrophic situation, but we need to be extremely vigilant. Now, under the backdrop of fact that USA has witnessed almost 73,000 cases in last 24 hours, and UK has witnessed almost 26,000 cases. So we are not off the hook. And in past also, we have faltered in forecasting this vaccine. So my key message is that we need to be extremely cautious about this monstrous illness.
Tell us what you've seen in India, Dr. Ravi, in terms of vigilance. Right. Tell us what you've seen in India, because back in March, the WHO also said this: to help end the emergency, the WHO calls on countries to continue or increase virus surveillance capabilities. Would you say that in India, and from what you've seen, these surveillance capabilities have increased or waned recently?
Look, in India, we are doing surveillance activities. Two, three good things have happened. We have vaccinated almost 2,200 million doses of vaccines have been given, which is incredible. In last 24 hours also, we have tested somewhere around 2,02,000 people, although we have detected only 243 cases. But in India also, we need to be extremely vigilant about the situation, seeing the weak infrastructure of our healthcare system. So we need to be extra vigilant in India also, because in past also we have learned that we have followed the footsteps of the Western countries. So the cases can increase, and we need to be extremely cautious and careful, especially our epidemiologists. The moment we detect a case, we should, you know, isolate the case, treat the case, and try to stop the spread of the virus, because it can come in India also.
Right.
Maybe right now we are in a comfortable position, but tomorrow it can, you know, spread.
Okay, Dr. Margaret, let me bring you in here, because Dr. Gabriel a moment ago was saying that we're not doing enough work to learn to live without the virus, and pointing out that the message from the WHO, as you heard, is confusing. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'm very glad we're having this discussion, because if the message is confusing, it certainly is important that we clarify it. In fact, I agree with everything he said, especially about I like this learning to live without it, to do everything we can, not just to prevent COVID causing problems, but the other respiratory infections that we have been far too willing to accept each winter. And indeed, really paying attention to ventilation, really paying attention to how we can protect ourselves in conditions when we're crowded together, when there are a lot of respiratory viruses circulating. This is absolutely critical. And this has not been taken up with the energy and the commitment that it must be taken up with. So I'm really glad that Dr. Gabriel is emphasizing that. And I would also like to say again, as our other speaker, Ravi, mentioned, we really need to step up the surveillance, testing, sequencing and vaccination. There are big, big gaps. And we are very concerned, and this was very much part of the Director General's message yesterday, we're very concerned that these things will create the perfect conditions for a new variant of concern.
So when you say we need to take it up, just for the sake of clarity, Dr. Margaret, are you talking about the WHO, or are you saying it is up to the individual countries to do so?
Oh, it's up to the world, all countries. So we have seen many countries dismantle their surveillance, not doing the testing. And I'm not talking about making everybody do tests all the time, but when somebody ill comes in, doing the PCR, then sending it off for genetic sequencing so that we, as collaboratively the world, but of course we WHO coordinate a lot of this work, can track what's happening with the variants. We now have 500 sons and daughters of Omicron circulating, and any one of them could cause major, major problems. But we'll only know that if the testing and sequencing is being done.
Right, Dr. Gabriel. So what does this mean? The WHO and Dr. Margaret is saying that this diminishing vigilance could leave the door open to new variants. What do you think this means in terms of countries like the UK, where you are, in terms of adjusting their strategies going forward?
Well, I think surveillance is absolutely crucial. We need to know about new variants, emergent variants, as quickly as we can so that they can be properly studied. And we've been very fortunate, I think, in recent months that we haven't seen the virus take any big leaps forward, either in terms of transmissibility or indeed in terms of the ill effects it produces. But that doesn't mean it can't happen at any time. Of course, the only way of really reducing the risk is to reduce the amount of COVID that is being transmitted in countries. And that means continuing to support vaccination programs across the world, but also doing the prevention. We need a mixed policy, a PVC policy. We need prevention, and that is things like better ventilation. And it is things like Dr. Harris mentioned about perhaps wearing masks in very crowded situations. It is about vaccination and getting those levels up. And one of the characteristics of a rushed vaccination program, which is what we've done, the world has rushed to vaccinate, is that often people get left aside. And I know from looking at the figures in several countries that there is big socio-demographic differences, either in terms of the uptake between population groups, between age groups, between social status of people being vaccinated. So we've got to really produce more rounded, more complete vaccination programs across the world. And then finally, we do have to have the control. So we do need that surveillance, and we do need action if there are really, really dangerous variants emerge, as they could, of course, do at any time.
Right. This is a bit challenging, though, isn't it, Dr. Gabriel? Because we see that, for example, in many, many countries now, testing and sequencing are declining.
They are. And testing is expensive. There's no doubt about it. And many countries are feeling the economic after effects of the pandemic and seeking to make savings and to reduce testing. And what we need perhaps is a more sophisticated approach to doing community surveillance so that not everyone has to be tested all the time, but we do need to do it. And there are systems in place for example, the testing of sewage to see what variants are circulating in local areas. That can be done on a mass scale. But we do need that control mechanism in place. And it is a good period now for countries around the world to be strengthening their public health systems. There are countries, interestingly, I'm in the UK, and the UK has made really dramatic changes to the detriment of its public health system in the last year or so. And that's unfortunate. And we're going in the wrong direction. But we should be strengthening, actively strengthening our public health systems across the world in every country, with a particular emphasis on looking after the people who are most vulnerable.
Dr. Ravi, you've said that Indians are heavily vaccinated or perhaps were at the height of the COVID pandemic. Where do things stand now in India in terms of vaccines?
As far as the vaccines are concerned, we have done good. We have given 2,200 million doses of the vaccines. Even our children are protected, and our protection rate is good. But I do agree that we need to address this problem globally, because we are all globally connected by a human chain. So if surveillance activities and vaccination is low in certain countries, you know, COVID is not going to respect the international boundaries, because people are doing tourism, they are intermingling with the other country people, and travel is going on. So we are going to win all together. So COVID is teaching us to learn every day. And one thing which COVID has taught us is that it is not going to respect any kind of international borders. So we need to vaccinate, and the surveillance activity should be there in every country.
Right. As but how do you India get countries to do that now, Dr. Ravi? Because at the time and at the height of COVID, if anything, the vaccination drive really exposed the inequalities and inequities, as Dr. Gabriel was just saying, out of the UK.
Yeah, actually, the whole international community should cooperate, and the health agency should look forward to this, that the countries which are a little underprivileged and where the vaccination rate is low, the surveillance is low, they should strengthen the vaccination rate and surveillance over there. But as far as India is concerned, the surveillance activities are going on, but definitely with not that kind of a zeal as it was in the previous months and years. But by and large, we need to be cautious. As a professional, I can tell you that the pandemics are notorious to come to return back. So we need to be a little more cautious, and we need to keep a situation. We need to keep an eye on the situation, and before avalanche of patients again come and they trouble the human kind.
Dr. Margaret, the WHO chief earlier this year, I believe it was back in February, he had warned that quote, narrow nationalism and vaccine hoarding by some countries have undermined equity and created the ideal conditions for the emergence of the Omicron variant at the time. Is the situation any different today?
The situation's improved a great deal. By the end of last year, we started to get, in fact, access to so much supply. We all had more supply than the supply outstripped the demand at one point. We have been able to accelerate enormously, I think 12.5 billion doses. It's not just us, WHO. This is COVAX has been able to do this. And the 12.5 billion I'm talking about are countries around the world. So an enormous amount of vaccination has gone on. But as Dr. Ravi mentioned, it's inequitable. We still have to do a great deal of work with some countries that it's not now about supply. It may well be that they simply lack the funding, the staffing, the infrastructure to get the vaccines to all the people that need them. So we have a specific program working with the countries that have the greatest difficulties to do that. But we do need the international community to keep on supporting that.
And Dr. Gabriel, what are the risks or what's at stake if these inequalities in vaccine access continue? Will mutant strains then continue to emerge?
Well, what we will see is more rapid spread of anything that may emerge. If you have communities where the vaccination rates are low and where preventive measures aren't being taken, and that is a problem in any infectious disease, but with COVID, it spreads so quickly and so rapidly. And then that will work its way through into the death toll. And also, we haven't mentioned long COVID. And long COVID is such a huge problem, the accumulating numbers of people suffering from long COVID. And inequality in vaccination distribution results in inequality in that in long COVID distribution. And that means more people and more vulnerable communities will suffer those
terrible
symptoms.
From what you've seen, from what you've seen when it comes to long COVID? What impact is it having on societies?
And it's had a very... the UK has had a very serious impact, and the number of people who are not able to seek employment has increased very substantially since the pandemic, and that is largely due to long COVID. And there are long waiting times to be seen at long COVID clinics that the government, that the health service has set up across the country. But we're still in the early days of learning how to cope with long COVID. COVID's a really dangerous virus and affects all sorts of systems, bodily systems, and creates all sorts of problems for people in their futures. And it affects all ages. Even people who haven't suffered badly in the acute phase of the illness can get very serious ongoing symptoms. So we shouldn't neglect long COVID.
Dr. Margaret, what is the WHO doing in terms of looking at long COVID and any strategies that are being put forward?
Well, we have a unit that's actually dedicated and working with the experts, including many experts from the UK, but around the world, on exactly this, on looking at what it is, what areas of health are affected, and of course, what can be done. But it's, as Dr. Gabriel said, people who have not been protected by vaccination are even more at risk. There seems to be quite a lot of work suggesting that not being vaccinated could make you more likely to have it. And one of the other things is, again, as Dr. Gabriel said, it's not how severe the acute illness with COVID was. That does not determine whether or not you get long COVID. So sadly, we've still got people who think it's fine to get COVID. It's not fine to get COVID because you don't know what the consequences are. Omicron is so transmissible. It certainly has changed the game, and many people have been infected. But ideally, if you're vaccinated, it does seem that this may be giving you some protection from long COVID.
Dr. Ravian, over in India, I wonder if you can weigh in on this topic of long COVID and tell us whether you've seen the impact that it's had on the society in India at this point.
Long COVID has a huge impact on the human morbidity. It is not only in India, but internationally. Because as a clinician, I can tell you a lot of people are, even in India, they are suffering from long COVID. Some of them are having headaches, backaches, psychiatric problems. Then they have what we call as brain fogging, insomnia, sleep disturbances. And moreover, they have problems with their respiratory systems, with deteriorating pulmonary function systems, the lung functions. So long COVID is definitely a big problem. And I think every country should have long COVID clinics now, because it adds to the morbidity and absentees from their official work. So long COVID is a big problem and is a big challenge. And it is there in India also. We are, even in my hospital, there are patients who are coming up for the follow-up with the long COVID, with their respiratory problems, psychiatric problems, and heart palpitations. And some of them have got conduction disorders in the heart. So long COVID is definitely a big challenge. And that is likely to continue because it is a chronic disease now. For acute COVID illness, look, this illness goes away within 2 to 3 weeks. But as far as the long COVID is concerned, it is a chronic disease. It may last for that matter, months together. So it is a big public health problem, and that needs to be addressed too. Moreover, right now the river is calm, so we need to prepare ourselves. The epidemiologist should do complete research. We should do research on other antiviral drugs. We should do research on the vaccines. And we should also keep a vigilant eye, because this virus can change its genome. And then the vaccines, there can be a failure with these vaccines also. So okay. We need to be extremely careful and vigilant about it.
All right. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Margaret Harris, Dr. Gabriel Scally, and Dr. Ravi Malik. We thank you for joining us. Thanks for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. Join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is AJInsideStory. From myself and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching, and bye-bye for now.